You're listening to CodeCast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. We are growing the community of developers across Zambia, one line of code at a time. Visit agoracode.community for more information, or like us on Facebook, at CodeAgora. We're on Twitter too, at CodeAgora.
My name is Mwaba Mugala, also known as Kredos, and you're listening to CodeCast. I'm a game developer, and hope you enjoy the show.
Okay, welcome to episode 7 of CodeCast. It's going to be amazing, guys. It's going to be really amazing. This is going to be my favorite episode of the year because I love game development in January. I don't do any game development beyond January. But Elias will touch a little bit about that. We have a team that never makes anything during the year. So this episode is about everything game development because this month is January and January equals...
Global Game Jam.
Yes.
You feel the hype? Do you feel it?
I feel it.
Yeah.
Definitely. So today we have a special guest. I will allow him to introduce himself. Then everybody else will kind of go on to that.
Hey everyone, my name is Mwaba, also known as Kredos, and I'm a game developer.
Perfect. Awesome. Perfect time for you to come on then.
Yep.
Hey guys, welcome back to episode 7 of CodeCast. I'm your co-host, Wizzy, aka the Zambian Geek.
I'm Elias, aka Elias.
I have no AKA. I'm feeling bummed because I have no AKA.
Well, that is AKA.
Sour Bones.
Okay. Yeah. And my handle is now my AKA. Okay.
Yeah. My AKA is not my handle because I'm not getting up this week.
And my name is Mukuma, and I'm your co-host. I'm a software guy, I guess. The titles kind of change over time. I don't even notice that. Okay, first segment. As always, per custom, tech news. And today is heated, guys. We're talking about CES, and people are touched. Let me be specific. Elias is a bit unhappy.
No, wait. Okay, look, we're going to get into it, but I'm not touched. I'm just a little underwhelmed. That is all. But let's get into the news.
Okay, so CES, right? So CES was from the 8th to the 11th of January, and I was pretty excited even in the last episode, and I really wanted to know what was going to happen.
Yeah. Is CES your favorite?
No, it's not my favorite. My favorite is actually Google I/O. I'm kind of getting fond of, I think it's called Chrome then, right?
Yeah.
Chrome then as well. I think maybe because I love the web a lot these days. So that's pretty much it. So getting right into it, I'm going to start with my favorite thing. We're supposed to be last, but I wanted to be first. Okay, actually, two things. So there's something called the Impossible Burger. So this thing has actually been around quite a while.
Impossible
Burger. 2.0. This is like the second version. So what this basically is you know the patty, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's grown in a lab. It's a plant.
The patty?
The patty.
Oh, okay.
The patty. It's meant to taste like a real burger. Like, you know, the meat and everything, same kind of vibe and, you know, juiciness.
It's
and stuff like that. So they kind of engineer most of the ingredients of the burger and we're supposed to lead a much healthier lifestyle.
Oh,
so less meat, you know, we save the environment as well. So it's made using an ingredient called HIND, iron-containing compound that's abundant in animal muscle. So it's supposed to mimic the basic meaty flavor anyway. So we'll post a link in the description after the episode is done, or when we put up the episode, so that people can read about it. But it's pretty interesting. Read reviews, and you know people are really raving over it. Like they actually taste really good.
Okay, second favorite thing.
Second favorite thing is something that's got a really weird name, and it's kind of hard to pronounce if you haven't looked at it for too long. It's called the Jax Jox. Now that's like one word. Kettlebell Connect works by having a rotating weight selection core that locks in and out of weighted plates. So the kettlebell can add and drop weights in seconds. So we'll put a link in the description.
It has a lot to do with math.
And
physics.
So
which you
don't
understand.
Yeah, basically.
Anyone that goes to gym, like you know how annoying it is to go back to the platform and get a bigger weight. With this one, all you just need to do is just click a button and you can raise the weight of your weights.
That's crazy.
That is actually defying the laws of physics.
Has
so
it
they're like connecting you.
Come on.
This is the website, eh? Connecting you to a better you. 6 weights, 1 place. That's 12 to 42 LBS in 3 seconds, man.
Yeah.
That's roughly what.
Yeah, so it basically changes weight from 12 to 42 pounds in 3 seconds.
So that's like what, that's roughly 4 kgs to 19 kgs.
And that's good for home workouts, in my opinion. And you know, it's only going for $350. I know it'll probably come down later.
$350.
Look, think about it. Walk into
$350.
Walk into game like Game Stores Zambia or Game Stores SA or whatever, and look at the prices of the weights. Like, think about it from like 12 pounds to 42 pounds, that whole range.
And how much would you spend?
Yeah, how much honestly. I spend? When we talk about shipping stuff in, right? Mm-hmm. There's different modes of measurement.
Yeah, yeah.
There's volumetric and what else is it? By mass.
By weight.
Yeah, exactly. So volumetric is basically just how much volume,
yeah.
Which is supposed to be cheaper than, so that wouldn't matter, right? The shipping.
Well, if most carriers that welcome to the shipping podcast. So most carriers, what they do is they basically have a certain weight, like a weight limit,
mm-hmm.
that will determine whether they start adding volumetric costs.
For
example, not to pimp any companies out, but for example, if you're using say.com, they have fixed weight, fixed prices for certain goods.
Mm-hmm.
But then certain goods, if they exceed a certain weight, say like a TV, mm-hmm. then they're going to add in volumetric to the overall cost and stuff like that.
Okay,
yeah,
that's cool.
That makes sense.
So this is the Jax Jocks smart kettlebell.
I think my favorite device, or anyway, the one that really caught my attention was the Capstone. So this is like a connected home mirror that uses Google Assistant. So like it's Google Assistant enabled. So like, you know, when you're brushing your teeth, you can check the traffic. Like we're finally here, guys. Like, you can check the traffic, you can check your weather, even before heading out. Like I don't know.
Do you know what
it's
thing
cool,
about? Do you know what the sad thing about Google devices is right now? Zambia isn't listed on.
Yes,
that's a list of countries that's available. I know someone that bought a Google Home.
Mm.
And I think they bought it last week, and it's terrible.
I don't think that's sad. I think that's more operational.
I think especially with Google, the pendulum is moving forward.
Yeah,
because recently, not too long ago, you were able to receive payments.
Yeah, you can receive payments
in some
of
the app store. So like,
app store,
like we're still behind, but at least the strides are for me, this is the reason why I thought the CES was underwhelming.
Yeah.
It's not that I thought the tech that was there was, you know, bad tech or anything like that. I just felt we weren't seeing anything revolutionary.
Groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Like some of my favorite things were like things that we've seen in the past, but just adapted to new forms. For example, the rollable TV was like huge at CES,
mm-hmm.
but we've seen flexible screens. We've seen from LG screens that take advantage of, you know, just being a part of the space. The
wallpaper
TV comes to mind.
Yeah.
Samsung has that it has the modular screen, it has the wooden TV thing going.
I think it has the flexible.
So like this is tech we've seen before, so there was nothing new that was coming, and the stuff that seems new and it's not necessarily new, like 5G, which I know was talked about in the last episode, and 8K. These are things that are not going to come to the consumer, the average consumer anytime soon. I'm sorry, but especially if you live in Zambia, do not expect 5G in the next 5 to 8 years.
My verdict on 5G is maybe wait until Vodacom finishes its test in the sort of,
and then really
we can kind of figure out like how.
Yeah.
Look,
and also I tend not to agree with you, Elias. Like you were underwhelmed because nothing new was shown.
Okay,
like, I feel that everything at this point that can be invented has already been invented.
Which
and
is not
I
my
feel,
argument.
Yeah, I and I feel this
like
is a stage for
perfecting. It's getting to that point where
like what else can you do,
tech.
Man?
Okay, look.
Honestly, what else
can
you
listen,
do?
Listen. I am not saying that they needed to come with flying saucers or anything like that. What I am saying is CES is a place that we see innovation that is not necessarily going to come to the consumer in the next year, but we see where tech is going. Mm-hmm. We saw this with things like 4K, mm-hmm. okay? I feel like we're seeing it with 5G.
Yeah.
I still think it's a ways out, but I do think that's the future. 8K is going to be the future after 4K, okay?
Yeah.
These things are the future.
Okay.
But ask anyone at CES last year, we knew about these things.
That's true.
Okay, so the thing that is underwhelming me is I wanted to see the kind of roadmap. And what I'm seeing is basically the same pit stops that were shown last year. Granted, there were really interesting things. There was this wooden plaque, what was it called? Some weird funny name, Mui. It's really simple. It's just a wooden plaque that is connected to the internet. But it's also a touchscreen.
What?
I can't.
And it is like a smart home hub.
Yeah, look, and I feel like the future is interconnectivity.
Exactly,
right?
IoT.
I think that's why, like Mukuma said, 5G is a really big thing. Not that we expect it soon,
mm-hmm.
but 5G is really going to change the way things are.
Yes, 5G is supposed to change the planet.
Yeah.
It will.
Basically. That's what it's built for.
Mm.
And yes, we're not going to see revolutionary tech right now, but I think we'll still see an improvement in life, productivity, and all that
yes.
sort of thing. And it's we're stepping into a space where it's going to become a haven for developers. Like, there's so much more to do now.
Yeah.
Like, dude, IoT.
Too much, man.
I agree.
Much.
And I'll say this about 5G. I know I seem like the downer right now, but like, I agree that 5G is the future because it's basically going to bring that lag that is always present.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to make it almost non-existent.
Non-existent.
Yeah,
with 5G,
almost.
Yeah,
non-existent.
It's, with 5G, it's going to be possible to have things like a doctor perform surgery on a patient halfway around the world.
Yeah, from his iPad.
Like, yeah, from his iPad. Things like that. Like, those are big things that can go like unnoticed.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that that is the future. But as a convention, CES was underwhelming because CES is supposed to bring the new stuff. It's supposed to bring the good stuff, you know? It's supposed to bring the
wow.
It's supposed to make you think, wow, now I see the future. But like, right now, I'm like, wow, the future is still what
the future
they showed
is,
us last year.
Anyway,
so, I think the emphasis has been on like connected homes,
yeah.
you know, smart homes. Because if you see what most of the companies were, you know, emphasizing.
Yeah.
You know, you have the lighting one, the Philips one. That's Philips
Hue. Yeah.
Yeah, Ring was there as well.
Yeah, like
you
all,
know, and
all
it seems all these are like independent.
Even Daimler showed up.
Yeah.
Like all the big companies came with
yeah.
the kind of
so
IoT.
All these are like
yeah.
yeah, it's basically IoT is now.
Yeah.
Like it's basically the future of things.
I agree with
now.
You there.
You have all these independent vendors, but think of what you can do. If you put them together, if you bring them together,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, hey, remember our episode on ecosystem blocking? You know, right now,
oh, yeah.
and playing very well together. Huh?
No,
yeah.
but
yeah.
in CES news, Apple kind of opened up a little to other TV manufacturers.
Mm.
Right? They basically let every big TV company use AirPlay 2, which is still restrictive, but consider it's Apple. So this is a step, and in maybe the biggest news in this kind of head-to-head competitive type, you know, big companies going head-to-head, but iTunes is now on a Samsung TV. I have no idea why they decided to put iTunes,
yeah.
because iTunes, in my opinion, is one of the worst modern. It's one of the worst modern softwares you can think off the
True.
Top of my head. Like
this
I cannot,
is an Apple
you know,
fanboy.
I cannot
Look,
think of
I
a worse. I install
other Apple products like that. But
No. I honest to God, like I used iTunes recently, and it was so bad. It was so bad. It was so bad.
Alas is in tears.
Like how? This is 2019. How
okay,
did
okay,
Apple...
there.
I'm mad.
Okay, so to wrap up our new segment on CES, I still think the Impossible Burger is the future. And it's maybe I'm becoming a health fanatic, but I feel like it's
can I just say a big shout out to gaming PCs. I feel like in the realm of like laptops, gaming PCs made the biggest stride. It was small strides, but yeah. It seems that's the space that people are like willing to experiment in.
Yeah.
Alienware came out with their new Alien
Area 51, yeah.
Like that was like, because it's basically a desktop that you can carry. Not very practical, but at least they're experimenting in that space.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I just thought I should mention that there was some innovation, even though in the future it's not gonna amount to much. But you know,
and in any case, there's a lot of other stuff as well, like in health and accessibility tech and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we won't really get into most of that. We'll put a link in the description when we put up the episode.
Yeah.
So moving along, the Game Jam is this month.
The Global Game Jam. This Friday. So when this episode goes up,
it would have started. So
yes.
The 25th to the 27th of January.
To the 27th.
This Friday.
Friday to Sunday. Game Jam. So Global Game Jam is kind of like a highlight of my year every year.
Me too. The only time of the Game Jam.
Yeah. It's okay. So let me put it this way. I'm a game developer in the sense that like I develop once a year. I'm no epic credos.
But we have made games.
But
we'll share links to our games.
It is about more than just game
making
development.
Games,
game
yeah.
development is a big part of it.
Yeah.
And I love that about it, but it is also about collaboration, you know, kind of building community.
Yeah.
Honest to God, like I think you tweeted this some time back. Yes, I do follow you on Twitter.
Okay, quote me, please.
We have
before you go there, like some of us are not well placed. Like,
oh, he's gonna get there.
Yeah, I'm gonna, don't worry.
It's
gonna be a whole thing.
Too long.
So,
put
on
the
rest
back.
maybe to preempt the actual discussion today, because we can get into what game development is, like the kind of life cycle and stuff like that, and what there's this notion that game development is when there is just for people
you
that
need
write
to know
code.
How to
write
to
like
ones
and
zeros.
You need to be like into this computer thing for you to actually make games. It's complicated. It's whatever.
Yeah.
So we can kind of start from there.
Yeah.
Then explain what the game jam is. Yeah.
So
yes.
Anyway, I was gonna say that the Global Game Jam has created like friendships that I feel I'm gonna have for the rest of my life, but that's just me. Look at me, I'm being all savvy. But yeah, like the game development sphere is a lot more open than people might think. So a common misconception is you need to know how to program, you need to not write in ones and zeros for you to be able to make a game, which is just not true.
Yeah.
Game development has a bunch of different people that work on it. I mean, look at some of the biggest companies in the world, like Activision. I know they were recently in the news because of the whole Bungie thing, but look at companies like Activision, EA. Like, these companies are huge companies, okay? You can be involved in game development by managing the money. You can be a project lead, okay? You can be an artist. You can be into music.
You could even be legal.
Like, wink, wink.
Shout out.
I mean, there's so many ways for you to get involved in game development, because game development, unlike other professions, is kind of
hugely diverse.
It's kind of this diverse melding of all these professions to make this one, you know, really great product. So like, we have people coming over for the Global Game Jam that are just artists.
Yes.
We have people that just write stories. We have people that are programmers, of course. I mean, it is software, so you do need programmers, but that said, no, but actually, you don't even really need programmers anymore.
Think about Twine.
I'd say the Construct, you don't need to know programming. You learn how
even
to use
Stencil,
the
really.
Yeah.
Right. You don't really need to know the...
Like, you guys are going in deep, I feel.
Like, the point is, there are programs that you can use to alleviate your lack of programming knowledge make the game.
So you guys hear that?
Do you want to know what my favorite part of the Game Jam is? It's what Elias said. It's the part about building friendships, right? This guy I met in 2015, his name is Sam. At the Game Jam, he was sitting right behind me. I was tweeting, and then he tweeted back and then tapped me like, "Is that you?" Then I'm like, and we've been friends since. He's a writer. I'm a programmer.
Yeah.
I remember that was like my first Game Jam experience, and I learned so much.
Yeah.
Like, guys, we spent...
That's deep.
Okay, lowdown on how the Game Jam works. So we make a game in 48 hours. We make games in 48 hours. We split up in teams and that sort of thing. And we're given a theme on the first day, and you make
theme,
a game.
Are the themes specific to like regions or?
No, it's a global theme.
General theme.
So like last year, the theme was what?
Transmission.
No, was that transmission?
Yeah, it was transmission.
Right.
Yeah.
So like,
no.
Was it waves or transmission?
It was transmission.
Not waves.
No, just transmission. Because
it's transmission.
So like, if you think about a theme like transmission, right? You can make anything you want. It doesn't even have to be like a software game. It could be like a physical board game
based on what
you imagine transmission could be in your world, in your
open
like
interpretation.
Yeah,
okay.
It's open. So that's like the thing I love the most, and it's the fact that you can't do it alone as a game developer. You can't do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
You need a writer.
Yeah,
you need a music guy.
Yeah.
You need someone that will bring the whole story to life.
It's actually collaboration. Eh?
Yeah, collaboration,
yeah.
And that's what the premise is of GGG as a whole.
Okay.
It's collaboration. Now I remember the first game jam. Right, we argued about how the story should go the first day, the entire first day. When I started making the game, I think we had 24 hours to go.
Yeah, like in the afternoon of the following Saturday.
So 24 hours
was like,
debated.
Okay, guys, I feel like, but no, it was actually fun. Like, here's the thing about the Global Game Jam, right? You set out to make a game in 48 hours, but really, that's not the point. Like, I know this kind of seems contradictory, but like, that's not the point. The point is working on those games together, being a part of that development cycle, you know, fostering the friendships, which, like, honestly, like, every game jam that I've been to,
I've met new people,
and those are people that I still communicate with today. They're actual friends, because you meet people that, me and you are, like, in software development, right, the programmers, but you meet people that have so many like similar interests.
You said right then.
Yeah. You meet a writer. You meet a writer, and then you find yourself talking about did you play Metal Gear Solid 5 and stuff like that, and you have like really deep discussions about this stuff, and you're like, it's so seamless. But that's what the Global Game Jam does. It brings people from all walks of life and kind of just melds them into this like kind of cooking pot of people that are there to collaborate. And honestly, like, I know I'm building it up a lot, but it's a beautiful thing. To me, it's like one of the highlights of my year.
Me too. And you know, the actual life cycle, which one, I know Elias and I are rumbling. We love the game. The actual life cycle isn't that hard. It's basically just four steps. We start with formulating what the idea is going to be. We design the game, and designing the game is actually maybe even on paper. Like, we just shoot ideas around how we want to build it.
Mm-hmm.
And then coding is actually the smallest bit of it. Like, actually bringing it to life, that's something that's just a small component of it, even though it kind of brings everything together. Then we just put it out there for people to play.
Yeah.
Especially if you know what you're doing, like Mwawa.
I know we didn't say this, but Mwawa actually has a game.
Yeah, he does.
Pressure.
Do I know?
I think
this is you, and we just put you in the spot.
In the spot.
Yeah, so, no, before we go tomorrow, like, Elias, before we came, I was telling Mukuma how, you know, me and Moa go way back, like, in high school, like, DK.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so from, like, DK to CBU, and, dude, he was, you started at CBU. Did you start at CBU before that?
I started at CBU.
Yeah, so like, I was pumping to his...
I was that guy.
Yeah,
you
he was
that
guy. Like, Mwawa, aren't you going for class? No, man, I have to finish this up. What
okay,
are you doing?
That is exaggeration.
What are you doing? I'm making a game. And at that point, it was like, making a game. You know
and
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, who does that here?
You'd be surprised.
You know? And dude, it's just so impressive, like, how far you've come. Like, not giving up on the dream. Yeah, it's really inspiring.
Yeah, so maybe for our listeners and stuff, we could kind of tell them what kind of games we have, like what kind of games actually exist around us. I know sometimes we tend to think games is just a console with a controller,
mm-hmm.
or some people call it a pad. They don't like that. Some people call it a pad.
I hate that so much.
I know, right?
I hate that so much.
Please, it's not a pad, it's a controller.
It's a loose change.
Moving on. Moving on. So we've got many different kinds of games. And I think even as kids, I don't know about you guys and how your childhood was like, but for me, like, I grew up like playing games outside the house. Like I never had like a console or whatever growing up, so when rainy season was practically my favorite because you could draw that stuff on the ground and you could play all those games and you could play. I didn't even know it's called is it dodgeball? We had a different name for dodgeball.
I know. We
had a different name for dodgeball.
Got two people at that.
Was it called game or something?
It was actually called game.
I have no idea. Anyway, so we played dodgeball. So that was my version of what a game was. And believe it or not, there was actually strategy in this kind of game. Yeah. So like when we look at the strategy, like the kind of games we have, we've got sports games, we've got what they call first person shooter games, MMOs, simulations, you know, educational games, the stuff kids play on these iSchool tablets, the stuff. Those are games as well. So there's like a whole spectrum of games and stuff like that.
Yeah. So for me, my childhood was basically kind of half and half. Maybe more leaning towards playing video games when I got my consoles. Because, growing up, I played, a lot of video games and it kind of defined my identity. I feel like I'm the person I am today. I got into software engineering because of video games. Because I was trying to figure out why games worked the way they did. I'm a bit behind the curve. In terms of game and in terms of my game development career, but that is still what makes me kind of who I am today. Like I hold that as part of my identity. So yeah, but I also played outside. I wasn't a complete nerd. I did play outside. I had friends.
What are you saying? If you guys are holding out on us, tell us about your childhood experience with games.
It doesn't have to be video games.
Oh man, I'll just say soccer, man. Yeah, but my experience with games started really early. I mean, most of my childhood experiences have been shaped around games in one form or another.
Yeah.
So like we're four like in our family, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's me and three girls. And I remember the birth of my last born sister.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my dad comes home to get us and he's like, oh, let's go pick up your baby sister. Like, yeah, okay. Before that, I'll buy you a brick game. Like,
the classics.
You know, I'll buy you a brick game. okay, cool, brick game, you know? And I think that's where it started from. I think like Alaya said, for programmers, I think it really starts early, eh?
Yeah.
It's really ingrained in you.
Yeah. Even when like, you don't realize it,
but you want to know how certain things work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was just like, oh, okay, what? Tetris, like, okay, but how did they make this? At the back of my mind, it's like, how?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm playing. How did they make this? Yeah, so, then we moved on to the Segas, I don't know how many Agames, PSS finally, and yeah, man. I'll say this though. I'm not really. I don't consider myself a gamer.
Well, here's the thing.
I play FIFA. FIFA.
No.
But yes, Elias, please. and at some point in my life, yes, I was a gamer. Like you know that Mortal Kombat phase, that high school phase, Elias. But yeah, man. But after that, man, ish. I don't know. I don't know. It's more.
You're an occasional gamer now.
Decorum, yeah.
Yeah. You're casual.
There's my gold PS4.
I reached level 100.
I'm at 280.
Wow.
That was loud. Okay. My story is a bit similar to last. I was like half and half. I used to play outside and I used to
play
first
outside more.
What?
Okay.
I used to play next game. So the first game I ever played was Virtual Fighter. It was on those arcade machines.
Dude. Should I say that first?
Yeah. So after Virtual Fighter, I was hooked. I was very hooked. And my aunt got me a telegame station. When I got that, my favorite game was Super Mario.
Classics.
Guys, if you've never played Super Mario,
if
you don't
never
exist.
Shame on you. If you've never played
absolutely.
Super Mario, please.
Please, let your kids play Super Mario.
Here's the thing. I feel like more people have played Super Mario than own Nintendo systems.
Yeah.
Like, it's that game.
Yeah.
It's that game. Like, it's the most popular video game ever.
Yeah. It's also the most pointless. You know that, huh?
Super Mario.
It is a masterclass.
Pointless hell.
No. It's not even about that. It's a masterclass in gameplay.
Okay.
Check yourself.
Anyway.
Oh, you guys are bringing back so many memories.
Yeah, I know, right? Welcome to Nostalgia.
And you know what? Like, we talked about how our experiences have been, like, with games and how we learned so much. You know, right now there's a lot of talk, like, even in terms of US regulation.
Mm-hmm.
I know in Africa it's not a big deal because we generally don't have these problems. You know, the shootings and everything.
Mm-hmm.
People are blaming it on video games. People are playing too much video, and it's kind of like
a funny story that is ingrained in the history of the video game rating system. This isn't the first time that the US government has blamed violence on video games. The whole ESRB rating system is because of violence that they said, oh, it's because of video games. Remember Mortal Kombat?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Remember how violent that game was?
Mm-hmm.
I was, I think, 8 when I first played it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
like,
this is brilliant. this is so good.
So what do you blame, like, the violence?
This is going to get into, like, politics.
So
I honestly feel it's just people.
I know that at the end of last year, like, all the big game development companies were meeting with Trump to kind of lobby the whole violence and gaming kind of thing. To kind of tell him that it's not really about the games.
So Trump thinks it's about the games.
Come on. So, like, when I was really, like, thinking about this stuff, I realized that since there's different kinds of games, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking about first-person shooter games. Like, I'm a big Call of Duty. I'm not even going to distinguish Battlefield and Call of Duty. I think both are pretty brilliant.
Call of Duty.
Like,
I'm more than one.
Medal of Honor.
I played that game for 1 week straight, man. 1 week straight.
Congratulations.
Nah. Like, I endorse that. That's brilliant.
I feel victimized.
No. Before Call of Duty, it was
I'm on the back foot here.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
And you
is
know,
it still
was,
there?
You can get
no.
it if you want.
I mean, they're old games, but they don't make them anymore.
They don't
like, EA made Medal of Honor, and Battlefield kind of
took super
simple. Yeah, like it took Medal of Honor's thunder.
Well,
yeah, so it's basically now what you got from Medal of Honor. You
guys, the benefits of gaming, right? We're talking about response learning, place learning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, disorders aside, like whatever theories are there, whatever psychological studies are there to kind of link gaming to whatever other crazy stuff is in the world. Look at it this way, right? You play video games on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of pick up like habits. Halo, for example. What I think it's a brilliant game. Totally brilliant game
with classics.
If you think about it, a lot of that has actually influenced the way you handle problems outside the game itself. Even the way you move around your surroundings and stuff like that. Like, you identify landmarks and identifying landmarks, and there's no denying the fact that games play a huge role in children's development, first of all,
mm-hmm.
and even adults as well.
Yeah.
And this actually leads me to saying, like, if we look at numbers in game development, the average age across the entire planet for people playing games, like gamers, is actually 33 years old.
Yeah.
What?
So,
average?
Yeah.
Average age.
33.
Yeah. So even the notion that games are for kids doesn't actually reflect
false.
What's
yeah.
what's when your kids
what's
go to school, what are you doing?
Mm. And it shows. Yeah. Like
you're that parent.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it shows. It shows like in the games that have been developed. Like there's this kind of through line of what games have become. Like they've become more adult and stuff like that. But yeah, it's really getting to a point where I feel like you can't argue that anymore. You can't say
true.
Games are for kids anymore. But yeah.
And maybe to give it a little bit more perspective. We talked about Moaba having a game.
Yes.
Yeah, like kinda get us through like where you started from and like some of the challenges you've had as well. And the biggest thing also, monetization, you can touch on that as well.
So I started in 2016. Initially it was supposed to be a Slenderman ripoff.
But then I love horror games so much.
So I just wanted to make a horror game. Like, I just want to make this horror game, get it out there. And a friend of mine told me about Alice in China. And I was like, you know, it would really be cool to make a game based on Zambian... Zambian history and kind of stuff. And to tell our story out there. So I started working on it in 2016, but because of school, there was like that in and out thing. So I had to... I had to take long breaks, but right now, basically we have a prototype ready.
Okay.
Yeah, it's ready, but because of certain issues, which I won't mention.
Okay.
Yeah, we have to kind of test it, and basically the game is there, the demo.
So is that ready for deployment?
It's not ready. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of bugs.
Okay.
But there's a lot of features. Like, that's pretty far along.
That's brilliant.
I actually didn't know that it was in post production. So
keeping it on the low. But thanks to the
not after this episode.
Codecast. You heard it here first.
Exclusive. Yeah. So thanks to the Digital Lab Africa competition I won last year, they helped. I was able to meet some professionals who really helped show me how the industry works and what to do in game development, basically. Because I'm not like a game developer. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't study game development.
Yeah, sure.
It was just something I just read, I just watched YouTube videos. So for me, it was more like, okay, everything was just happening.
Mm-hmm. Your passion drove the project.
So
sounds like the stars aligned there.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, the team actually, I think it's because the team like has increased, added some people to the team, and that's really helped.
It goes back to what we talked about earlier, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You can't do it alone.
I was told that very explicitly.
How you monetize it?
It's basically going to be a service like Steam. Because of how Steam is, it's really become saturated.
So many games are going on there, so much shovelware.
Yeah.
It's becoming ridiculous.
It's called Kinguin.
Kinguin.
It's like an online store for indie developers.
Okay.
And it's relatively new, it's like 2 years old. So,
So you met them and.
Yeah, they said, you know what, if your game is ready, just tell us and we'll hook you up. And so, yeah, that's...
So, what you're basically saying is there is a market for games, even African games, basically.
Yes, that's another thing. Like, the world really wants to play African games because from what I was told, they're kind of tired of this whole... Western stories, we have games in space and shooting. Now they're looking to Africa to get more ideas
out of Africa.
Yeah, for innovativeness and stuff. And that's why the French are investing heavily in African games. So if you want to start game development, now is the time to start.
Yeah, and kind of to give it a bit more context, like I was looking at some statistics on like revenue in game development in Africa.
Yeah.
Just Nigeria alone was a $200 million market in 2017. This is like 2 years ago. Like imagine the growth now.
Yeah. South Africa last year.
Yeah, South Africa was dope last year as well. And I was just about to say I'm super proud of Kenya, Cameroon.
Yeah.
I think the first studio I heard about was from Cameroon. I just don't remember that name, but they had a pretty cool game based on Cameroonian culture. We have Zero Reason in Zambia as well that make games. The link in the description.
Yeah.
So like Egypt was the largest market. And I was shocked. Yeah. Egypt was the largest market in 2017 by revenue. So it's like gaming markets in Africa.
Egypt.
So Egypt was Egypt, then Nigeria, then South Africa, then Algeria, then Morocco, then Tunisia, and then Kenya. So you can see that there's markets.
That's markets, right? So that's basically the people that bought the games.
Yes, people that bought the games.
Yeah.
But then...
Okay, that's like, why Africa?
But then we're basically seeing a double-digit growth on a yearly basis.
Yeah.
On a yearly basis.
Yeah.
So you expect that there'll be a... Look, let's be serious. Let's be straight. Be honest, right? Elias, have you bought an African game this year? Or last year, sorry?
I bought the last African
game. Elias, be honest.
Okay.
I ask Elias because Elias buys games now. Like, I've known Elias as the person that buys games because he wants to support the game development industry. Like, he understands the value of game development. Mm-hmm. You know, when you work in an industry, you begin to see how hard it is to actually make this.
Yeah. I don't do Pirate Bay anymore, guys. I'm sorry. Like, now I buy my games.
Hashtag off. Still piracy.
Still yeah, pirate. Hashtag. Yeah, like, no, deep. Like we no, joke about good. It, yeah. but, yeah. like, it's seriously,
yeah, that's deep,
like,
man.
Working as a developer, seeing how
yeah.
hard people work
yeah, sure.
to make these products,
sure.
and then you just take it for free. Mm-hmm. I just don't feel it's right, but I also understand the economic situation
yeah.
in Zambia,
yeah.
so it's kind of
it's like
kind
paradox,
of
rough. Eh?
Yeah, it's actually really rough.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, the last African game I bought was, what's that South African game that was, the one about like 80s heroes, it's a side-scrolling 2D.
I think I remember, wait,
yeah,
Broforce, yeah.
So Broforce is the last African game that I bought, and like, full transparency, I didn't even know it was African when I bought it. It was just that cool. I looked at it, I was like, this is beautiful. Because like, I am really into
yeah.
like 80s culture, nostalgia,
yeah.
like the whole neo-synth
yeah.
type thing. And like that kind of scratched. And it's funny, you know, I have nostalgia for things that were there before I was born. It was just that good. And I honestly feel like African games are getting to a point where...
And you didn't know?
I didn't know. I knew. It's actually Sita who told me.
Yeah.
Like, she was talking about how
oh, yeah.
she
shout
knows...
out to Sita.
Yeah, shout out to Sita. She was talking about how she knows the developers of Broforce, and she's in South Africa. And I'm like, wait, what? And yeah. But like, seriously, guys, do not sleep on African games. Like,
and that's what I was about to say. Like,
yeah.
we're talking about a $200 million market in one country alone.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're buying games from the US or Europe or whatever,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
Like, the whole point is to develop a culture of embracing the local scene
mm-hmm.
and kind of... Like, you like Broforce even before knowing it's African. That's
yeah.
what that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
before saying... You are buying this because
yeah.
it's local.
Buying this because
be.
It's African.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Proudly Zambia. No.
Because it's good.
Like, yeah.
Because it's,
no,
it's
good.
Buy
yeah.
this and trust me, if you're looking for good
not,
games, you will find them. Like,
yeah.
there's actually, I was
Uh-oh.
Given a code.
No.
I didn't pirate it. Full transparency. I was given a code on Steam to download it.
Okay.
I have connections. Games, African games are out there.
Don't sleep on
them. And some of you might be playing African games and not even
know.
Yeah, like no real talk.
Yeah,
you might
deep.
Be playing African games. You don't even know about it, but you're playing African games.
I mean, we have Star Scooter.
I mean,
right.
we have Star Scooter,
right.
brilliant. Yeah.
Like, we've been waiting for ages for Star Scooter, man.
No, but it's
oh,
out.
It's out now?
Yeah.
Already?
Yeah, it's okay. They dropped it. It's on Itch.
Yeah.
yeah, it's on Itch. Itch.io.
I think that's a Zambian game, Star Scooter. We'll drop the link as well in the description.
Alistair.
So, like, I think last year, Game Jam last year, we talked a lot about... having more game studios in Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I kind of started looking into other game studios in Africa as well. So I did, I was talking to City Online and we found a guy that collects research like on games in African studios and stuff. So like, there's a lot of studios in South Africa. There's a couple spread across the continent as well. Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria as well. I think in Kenya, we had a review on a game called Nairobi X. Side-scroller as well.
Yo.
So like there's a lot of like Africans really trying to make it on the game development scene.
Mm-hmm.
And fun fact, Sub-Saharan Africa, right,
mm-hmm.
is
mm-hmm.
we have a lot of people buying, we won't call them smartphones, but
mm-hmm.
feature phones.
In the
world, yeah. That is growing, yeah. In the world. So what you have is a market for mobile games and people are taking advantage of that, selling.
Yeah, like, yeah, so even just the influx of, like, Chinese phones. Like, I feel we give Chinese phones a bad rep, like, we give them a bad name, but what they've done for Africa
well,
as a whole.
Well, African market,
yeah.
yeah. That's true.
It's huge, man.
Look, as a software developer, software engineer, like, I see the value.
Yeah.
With more people access to mobile devices means lots of opportunities for
Exactly.
In Zambia, we're stressing a lot about financial inclusion. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Only possible right now because there's much easier access to these devices.
Yes.
And the thing is, we fuss a lot about smartphones, but like I said, feature phones, like just mobile phones in general, mm-hmm. as long as they can have even a tiny bit of access to internet, mm-hmm. they can go way in terms of like...
Yeah, actually, when you really think about it, the term smartphone, like, what does it really mean today? Mm-hmm. Because, like, if we're being completely honest, the latest iPhone and, say, a Huawei that is, like...
Don't use Huawei. Infinix or something.
Yeah, even Infinix. No. Like, not even throwing shade. Okay. I'm not even hating on these companies.
Sorry.
I'm just saying...
Yeah.
The capabilities of these phones are mostly determined by what their apps can do.
True.
It's cool when companies go on stage and say,
okay,
oh, this camera can
make
say,
sense.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's defined by what these apps can do. And a lot of these quote unquote dumb phones have the same apps that the latest iPhone has. So what does the term smartphone really even mean?
Welcome
to my daily philosophy.
Philosophize. You should listen to our podcast.
Philosophalias.
New handle comes in. Hashtag
philosophalias. Hey, maybe that will get more traffic. My current one, because Twitter is hard. It's hard out there.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
And you know, in the same vein, right? It's hard. It's hard across the board. Like, okay, when we talk about our local scene, right?
Yeah.
You make an app, you make whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you know how much you have to do just to get your app to break barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we have. I'm not even proud of this. We have 17 million people in this country. You can't honestly think you're going to make it big with 17 million people. You need more people.
You can't.
True.
And
even out of those 17 million,
how many people have access?
Exactly. And dude, sorry to say this. I think we should have started this in our new segment. This is a topic of just the point of internet penetration.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much can you do with what you have?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's only so, like you're saying, 17 million.
Yeah.
That's a small number.
Yeah. So that comes back like to Mama making a game, right? When you talk about your market, because you've obviously thought about your market. You're obviously not targeting just 17 million people.
Yeah.
And even then, there's so many issues we're dealing with. Internet fraud.
Yeah.
Like half the people that are going to play your game won't pay for it.
It's
like these are the realities.
It's true.
Yeah. So especially if your like target market is just Zambia, like again, I'm saying this. I know that the economic situation in Zambia is rough.
It's rough.
That's why people like pirate games, and I'm not out here like judging or pretending there's no problem. But you can't ignore the fact that most people that play games in Zambia don't pay for them. You get a game, you get a PC that can play games, and that is it for you. You're done. Okay, you chip your PS3, you chip your PS4, as they call it, chipping. You're done. That's it. None of the money that guy is going to spend is going to come to you. Okay,
yeah.
It's going to go to the person that downloaded that game off the Pirate Bay and is selling it in town for 20 quad. Okay, those are the realities of this.
Yeah.
Latest
games
on Facebook. Get the latest games. Only 10 kwacha. Dude, that's a $60 game. Like, what are you doing?
So
I understand, but targeting Zambia alone is
it's really not gonna work. And you know, one of the issues that I have is and this applies to a lot of other industries as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's the lack of access to market data. I don't know what it is, whether we can't mine the right data ourselves, we don't know where to look, or it's just not available. Before you say something.
Sorry.
I think we need, personally, I feel like we need, I don't know what we can do to gain access to some of the data that we should have easily, you know what I mean? Like, we have a statistical office. They have tons and tons and tons of data.
They don't even.
Up until last year, you still need to write a letter to send hand it in for you to get data.
Mm-hmm.
And even when that data comes, it'll come on flash drive or whatever. Like, how long until we're able to access data easily? It's important for everything. You need demographics for games.
That's hectic. Dude, and I was saying this to someone earlier on today. Like, data is the new oil. You know, data is the new currency. You cannot
Like we've said this a couple of times now on this podcast.
To grow without data in this economy, you just can't. If you hold data, he who wields data runs the world.
So wait, so what's the real cost of game development?
You want to pay the talent, but you also want to market your game. You know, you want to put, like, when you look at like AAA developers, like money goes all over the place. It goes into publishing, it goes into testing, it goes into all sorts of things that you don't think about, but actually cost money.
Yeah, and that kind of goes into any kind of development. Like,
even a
house,
true.
People go into building a house without realizing.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
So the same dynamics apply.
So it's more of a thing that people think once you can code, you can do it. This misconception that when you can program, you can do anything that a computer can do.
Yeah.
I feel like needs to die. It needs to die a natural death.
Yeah.
I don't know, I feel like you're killing people's hopes and dreams. That's how we get them in, you know.
No, right? listen, I understand.
Yeah.
I understand that we develop games, we develop software and all that, and you do brilliant things with software, but this misconception should die. Anyway, I'm really curious, because you've actually developed a game. I'm really curious what your insights are into, like, the costs of making a game.
So, like, think about me. I'm not really a game developer.
Yeah.
I'm just, like, you know. I really know very little about game development beyond doing it for a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Say I want to get into it as a career.
Yeah.
Like what kind of insight are we looking at?
Yeah.
If you want to get into it.
Well, it's basically your career, man. Like,
dude, you're full time now, right? You're full time game developer.
I wouldn't even lie, it's hard. It's very hard.
No, like honest truths right now.
Honest truths,
yeah.
It's very hard.
Yeah.
But you have to be focused. And I think one of the things that you have to...
Be willing to spend money on.
Yeah. I think you have to have a job.
No lie.
Especially in Zambia.
Yeah.
Right? Because you find that you reach a point where you're stuck, you have no money, and... You develop your programmers. We want to do this, but we can't do it. We need to get the money, and you're just like, you know,
I'll say
for me, I'm very lucky because the people I'm working with just willingly stepped in.
Okay.
Just said, let me help you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have
they
to pay.
See the money. They out here like, yo.
We see the future.
If someone can see the money, that basically means they can see the vision.
I'm not even knocking the people that are helping you. Like, I'm just saying, like the reason they're because they know that if they work out, not only, like, if it works out, not only are they going to be able to, you know, make some money from it, but they'll be able to be, like, part of this, you know, new, they're kind of pioneers in terms of Zambian game development.
Yeah,
so, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Which is honestly really cool. So
I feel that's why this podcast is so helpful. It's not easy, eh? It's not easy out there, but you can imagine how hard it is even from an African, even in an African context.
Yeah.
Like, you can't believe, like,
it's hard enough developing games when you're in America.
Yeah.
Like,
it's hard enough there.
Yeah.
Try doing it here.
Yeah. Think of the repercussions of developing in a country that basically doesn't have an industry for game
development. Yeah, and like, especially for you, like,
you know what I mean? We barely have statistics for that.
Honestly, what you're doing is something that I feel like the game development industry needs. Like, we need a success story.
Yeah.
Like, we need the kind of thing that we can point to and say, hey, they did it.
Yeah.
He did it. Why can't other people do it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I feel the industry is still young in Zambia, and, like, you're always going to run into hurdles. Like we said, like, you're developing games in America and you're running into these hurdles. Like, you hear these horror stories. Telltale Games got closed recently, and some of those guys didn't get a penny after the closure. That is ridiculous. Like, it's ridiculous that you work so long and you make $0.
And this was an established...
And this is Telltale Games.
Part of game development as well is dealing with the legal issues.
Like,
when you get into it seriously and you're thinking about making money, you kind of have to think about the legalities of stuff. Like,
because I was actually contacted by some dude from the Lumpa Church He was like, this is the Church of Jerusalem.
Yo!
So you need to have papers in order
bro,
to
bro, you lie.
It's true.
Whenever there's an opportunity to make money.
Are you serious?
It's true.
So you have to
so he heard about the game.
Yeah.
At least he heard about the game. How he plays it.
Now that he heard, we need to try and not get shut down.
Yeah.
Dude, are you serious?
Serious.
This is ridiculous.
I had to patent the game. Just to stuff like that.
Wait, did you patent it here? Or?
Yeah, here.
Oh, great.
Just
yeah, you have to set
the
name, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Lumpa name.
Yeah, that's great.
But yeah,
it's
ridiculous.
Because that was like probation
yeah.
for the church.
Yes. And you know, when you think about legalities, you kind of have to think about GDPR as well. We're talking about
yeah,
GDPR
like
in our previous episodes.
Yeah,
and
so
it's also rolling in on gaming.
Yeah.
Like, hey,
I mean, games are software, so any game that
strong.
Is taking
that's
your
data
yeah,
that's
is
exactly.
part of that. Yeah, so.
No, like if you're developing games and you're hoping to have a European market,
you have to comply with GDPR.
I'm going to say this again. If you're developing anything, software, that's going to be online, or you're planning on spreading it, please, look up what GDPR is.
All those notifications
general
you get.
Data protection.
All those
cookies,
emails you were
all
ignoring.
All those accept cookies, are you okay?
Yeah.
All those okays you keep clicking.
So,
there's a reason
for
that.
There's a reason.
So please, like, think about GDPR, because in GDPR, there's privacy by design, there's the right to be forgotten, there's stuff about data portability, like, it's all about protection of the consumer. And if you're going to be careless, are you going to be hit with a lawsuit? I don't know if you heard what Google is getting charged
lawsuits,
on the regular.
Lawsuits can bankrupt you.
Oh,
it's
oh.
real.
It's crazy.
It's not even a game. Like, honestly, your life could be turned around.
Data is the new oil. Data is the new
like, people
price.
Are not playing. So, yeah.
Okay. Like, my personal opinion. I love gaming. Yeah. I'm not an avid gamer. I'm like, you know, my casual gamer.
You're not like me.
Okay, whatever, man.
I'm worse.
Okay, so when I think about gaming, I see opportunity, right? Like for many different spheres, industries, I think about gaming in terms of like psychological being.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot that gaming can do for actual
advance,
progress
yeah.
and growth.
And
even
awareness.
Like
yeah.
even just simple stuff like, okay, not simple stuff, but stuff like awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Like getting
yes.
people to understand the concept. You can do that so easily with gaming because people can relate to it. Kids can
mm-hmm.
relate to it. I don't know, I believe like, you can mold a kid's mind. Oh, that whole saying about you can't teach an old dog
yeah.
tricks. Like, you say it, but you don't know what it actually means.
Yeah.
Like, as a kid, you can be molded.
Yeah.
And games can play a huge role in actually doing
yeah.
stuff like that.
I watched the whole interview on, how they're using games to counter Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's working.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because, yeah, like, there are lots of, There's lots of research that goes into how games improve things like eye and eye
coordination.
I can honestly say, as a gamer, learning how to drive, I learned it a lot quicker.
We all did.
Someone else.
GTA.
That didn't play video games.
Yeah,
because
true.
I feel
no,
I played video games.
That's
so
true. That's true.
I am just saying like don't knock games. Games actually help. I grew up playing video games and I could not imagine being a better being.
Yeah.
Than I am.
I mean, even games like World of Warcraft.
I mean,
they teach you resource.
I mean, Assassin's
yeah,
Creed
definitely.
Origins just came out with their whole like educational thing,
yeah.
and like it is teaching people about Egypt
yeah.
in ways that I learned about Italy, like ancient Italy, from
Assassin's Creed 2.
Yes. Like it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
very,
so
yeah.
yeah,
like now you can imagine what that would do for Africa if
yeah,
we actually embraced our own
exactly,
culture
exactly.
and used it.
Yeah,
this is why I love the Cameroon Studio. I need to look for the name and put the description. Like it's all based on culture,
yeah.
and that's so appealing. You have no idea. And I know we had a wave of like culture and games in Zambia. Like
mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was last year or the other year, but I don't
mm-hmm.
know. It's kind of dead off. We should check into that. But it's really, really important, guys.
I'm going to GDC.
GDC is a game development convention, right?
Like,
yeah.
I'm not even joking. I'm
that's
so
the only one.
That's
yeah.
the only one. And it's going to be in San Francisco, and I'm going to be talking about preserving African culture through video games.
Wow, wow. Oh.
Dude,
Cynthia will be crying right
you
now.
Are,
like,
you,
Cynthia,
are, you are, you are,
so Cynthia
gonna be here.
Like, oh yeah, Cynthia,
you're
a
pioneer.
Cynthia wouldn't be here today because she's not feeling well. But then she talked about this in the last episode. Like, we talked about the deep learning in Dawa and how so many Zambians represented. Like, this is an example of us showing that there is stuff going on.
Yeah,
and we're not remaining behind. Like, we've taken the active step to making sure that we
We are there
as well.
Shout out to C-Tech. Also went to GDC.
GDC, that was 2017, right?
Much love.
Just given my take on what I think gaming can do for the industry, what I think gaming can do for like improving life, basically,
yeah.
And stuff like that. It's underrated, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Very.
Yeah. So I don't know, we could go around and all of us can give like our final views on what we think game development is and how it affects us and what we feel like is the future, basically.
I think I've talked about my history of gaming. I've talked about how gaming has kind of made me who I am today. I will say this. Game development isn't easy by any stretch of the imagination, but nothing worth doing is.
Is it easy?
Said, yeah, I've said that, I think, for like what you're doing with your game. I know it's a project of passion. I know that you love what you're doing and it strains you, but
yeah.
I feel like just keep doing what you're doing. And I don't know how much you're selling it for, but you've already got however much you're selling it for from me.
True.
Like, I'm definitely going to buy it day
me
one.
Too,
like, if you have like a pre order scheme, like, I am there. So,
that's
fine. So, yeah, like, I know this is going up on Friday, but even so, if you are interested in the workings of game development and so on, come for the Global Game Jam. If you're listening to this on Friday, come for it on Saturday. We'll be going on Sunday as well. I'm sure Mara will be there as well.
Yep.
So,
dude, it's been eye-opening for me, especially this episode. I'll be real. Like, yeah, I'm not an avid gamer, but having seen what work is put in, you know, even from a developer's point of view and from a non-developer's point of view,
It's
pretty deep. And I feel like a win for Zambia is a win for Africa.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially at this point in time. Like, dude, you're speaking of, you know, GDC. That's huge. Let's not downplay.
Yeah, let's not pretend it's not big.
It's huge. I'm sure even
you being modern.
I'm sure even you are wondering how the heck did I get
every
here?
Day.
Yeah, so you know, I mean, ultimately, I think Africa has a rich history, and you know, despite all the mythology and whatnot, I think we have a history that we need to tell ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's unmatched,
yeah.
Literally. Africa is the last frontier.
Yeah.
It's a history that we need to tell ourselves in every aspect of life.
Yeah,
basically, programming and now gaming.
Yeah.
That was beautiful, man.
Yeah. We need to tell this
story
ourselves.
Definitely.
And this is a start.
Mm.
You don't know how many kids will listen to this podcast later and think, ish, I need to take up game.
And
you just don't know
how many kids will play a game.
You don't know. You don't know.
Wow.
We might
this
not
actually,
get, yeah.
like this actually happened
yeah.
in the country.
You might not get all the glory or the fame, but you've opened this up for many, and I think, yeah, it's a good thing.
It's important. I think right now I just want to be a phone to show people that it's possible.
It's been real. We've had so much fun recording this episode, and we just hope that you really understand that gaming at its core has a much deeper sense of meaning than what we give it sometimes. And I know we may not appreciate it as much, but I hope after this episode, like, we have more people that kind of understand the value that it is. And we'll put links in the description for all the stuff we've talked about, the game studios in Africa. Shout out to everybody that's doing awesome work across the entire continent. Please keep telling your stories. If you can, please get in touch with us. We're on Twitter, that's CodecastZM. We're on Facebook as well, that's Codecast Zambia. Reach out to us so we can tell your story as well. We're all about telling stories. It's an unscripted podcast. We are a fun-loving bunch, and we love having people around. Today, Mwaba was here.
Mwaba.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you very much for coming through.
Hashtag
you.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah, definitely. We appreciate the support, and good luck at GDC, which is basically the game developers.
Dude, give us a shout out at GDC.
Yeah. Like Elias was saying, this weekend, the 25th, 27th, is the Global Game Jam. We have it every year. It's at the Global Platform Zambia, just along British Road.
Also, if you're in Livingstone, There's a global game jam
site in Livingston as well. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So please come through. It doesn't matter if you know how to write code or whatever. You don't know anything about gaming. It's open to everybody. So come through. Enjoy the experience. We'd love to have you there. We're here to tell stories, and that's what we're all about. So,
Codecast, we're out.
Follow us today. We're Codecast Zambia on Twitter. We're Codecast Zambia on Facebook. Sour Bones on Twitter. And
I'm the Zambian underscore geek.
And I am Epic Kratos.
I'm changing my tag on Twitter. Listen, for the next on the next podcast.
Yeah, it's been amazing, guys. It's been great. Podcast, we're out.
You've been listening to Codecast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. Visit agoracode.community for more information or like us on Facebook. That's @CodeAgora. We're on Twitter too, @CodeAgora.